tears roll down the street. Look at the tears roll down the street. I'm waiting in tears, baby, looking for my baby, and I wonder, wonder where can he be. I saw my baby one morning. He was walking down the street. Saw my baby one morning. He was walking on down the street. Made me feel so good till my poor heart would skip a beat.
That's the great Etta James with "The Sky Is Crying." It's a classic blues standard, and you heard Brian Ray on guitar. Etta, of course, you might know that she's best known for her signature ballad, "At Last." But she passed away last year, a great voice, a woman of incredible range. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Thursday, March the 14th, and at the luxurious Jefferson Hotel in Washington, D.C., just a hop, skip, and jump away from the White House, Organizing for Action, which calls itself a grassroots organization, is busy taking care of business. Whose business, you might ask? Well, this is where it gets a little complicated, but if you stay with me, we'll both get through this and you'll have a different understanding of what taking care of business means. You see, Organizing for Action is, in effect, the revived political foundation and machinery of President Barack Obama's 2012 re-election campaign. It's the same way that Organizing for America and Obama for America were the continued movements of his 2008 campaign. Organizing for America operated as a political project of the Democratic National Committee, but Organizing for Action, the current movement, is registered as a 501c4 nonprofit social welfare organization and community organizing project. That's just the way they described it, which allows it to advocate for legislation, but not support any political candidates. And because of its tax status, it doesn't have to disclose funds that it raises or the sources of those funds. The president says Organizing for Action's sole purpose is to apply pressure from the outside to support his legislative priorities on the inside with a pretty difficult situation that he's facing in Congress. But I think we have to take a look at this a lot more closely. We do. Now, before I get any further, I know there would be people saying, oh, there she goes, bashing Obama again. It's not about bashing Obama. It really isn't. It's about telling folks to believe what you're seeing and to understand what is unfolding before your very eyes. There is a whole other agenda here, and it is for the benefit not of the people who are asked to support these things en masse, it's for a very tiny group. And I've said it on this program. There's such an inner circle that Barack Obama has facilitated the formation of that even he is not a member of it. But if you look at how things have developed from the first term to now, you would see that there are several levels and layers of plans, and the beneficiaries remain a tight formation. The masses are there to support this very small nucleus. And they have no problem whatsoever just using it all up. Well, let's start with the first thing they used up. We have the first lady, Michelle Obama, explaining, because she's very popular, they trotted her out. She's a very charismatic woman, and, you know, she's very pleasing to the eye. And they trotted her out not too long ago to explain this new organization, and not just what the organization is about, but more importantly, to let you know what your job is with respect to this new formation. Here is the First Lady, Michelle Obama.
Last year, we did something truly extraordinary. We registered millions of people to vote, we recruited folks across this country to serve as volunteers, and we got millions of Americans out to the polls in this past election. So we should all be proud of what we accomplished. But let's be clear, all that hard work was about more than just one election. So if we want to finish what we started and truly make that change we believe in, we can't stop now. And that's why today, I'm proud that our friends and supporters are launching Organizing for Action, the next phase of our movement for change. Supporters like you will be the heart of this organization, because for the past 6 years, you've done something so much bigger than elect a president. You've given ordinary people a place in our democratic process again. The relationships you made, the tools you built, and the lessons you've learned have already begun to change our politics. And in the coming years, they can change our country. And that's the mission of Organizing for Action, to build on the work we've already done by training and empowering the next generation of leaders and supporting the grassroots organizing you want to do on the issues that matter most to your community and to our country. Now, in terms of the specifics of what this organization will look like, a lot of that will be up to you. It will be determined by your energy and ideas and feedback. Because after all, this is your movement. And going forward, it can be whatever you make of it. I often think back to one of my first dates with Barack all those years ago. Back then, he spoke to me about the world as it is and the world as it should be, and our obligation to bridge that divide. The work you've done has brought us so much closer to the world as it should be, but we aren't there yet. We have so much left to do to lift up our families, to strengthen our community, and to help all our children fulfill their God-given potential. And as Barack has said, winning an election won't bring about the change we seek. It's simply the chance to make that change. So I hope that you will join Organizing for Action to seize that chance. Thanks so much.
Oh, that's a tweet. She was talking even about a date with her, the first date with her husband, when he, of course, as the teacher, instructed her about the world as it is and the world that he envisioned, because he's a visionary. I go with that. Okay, that's great. But I was paying attention to the 6 years that Mrs. Obama was referring to, the 6 years that we have invested in something. The 6 years that we, The pronoun was very important. We, it means we are all together in this now. We have created a reality that is dramatically different from any reality existing before. We did that. And we are 6 years in the hole. And what is asked of us now? Go the distance. In other words, you went 6 years, but it's not really the finish line. We have yet a distance to go. So join in this thing. You come in and provide all of that. You provide the sweat. You tote that barge and lift that bale and get this thing to the finish line, because, you know, it's all about you. It's all about you. You had all this vision. You put forward the energy. You made the effort. And you made this election, this first election happen. And yes, it was nice and everything, but, you know, we still have, and yes, you did the second election. Yes, we recognize that, but we still have a long way to go. My question is, who are the we? Who are the we? And what have we gotten so far from our investment? I've been taking a look. I've been trying to find it. It's hard. I even got a flashlight, looked around, saying maybe I'm missing something. But it's invisible. I can't see it. I can't see what we're getting. We're getting the work. We're getting the jobs to be out there and to carry out a mission. We're getting that. But is that all we're supposed to be getting? I want to take you through today my reasoning, and you're free, of course, to disagree. In fact, I'm hoping that you do, because I so want to be wrong about this. I so want to be wrong about this. But this thing hit me like a ton of bricks. This is like, is there no shame? Is there no conscience in the man that we put in office and actually created a political reality for him? Is there nothing he won't do to embarrass us? So brazenly asks for things as if they're entitled. We gave you everything you asked for. We made you real. We actually actualized your dream for you. We provided the muscle that lifted you into orbit. We gave that to you. We gave you the space. We gave you the credibility. We gave you the authority. We gave you the permission. We gave you the mandate to make change. That's what we did. We even convinced ourselves to jump back into the fray when we decided we don't want anything to do with politics. We changed our minds. We got into the street. We did all of that grunt work. We created an enthusiasm that you could not by yourself do. You could not do it, and your handlers could not do it. We made it possible for you to reach the highest heights that you had set for yourself in the shortest amount of time. We landed you exactly where you said you wanted to be landed, and we placed our faith in you, our trust in you, that one, you could do the job as you said you could, and two, that you would remember the constituency that made your political reality come true. Well, let's talk a little bit about this Organizing for America. Joining me is Ken Vogel. He is the chief investigative reporter for Politico, which covers political news with a focus on national politics. Thank you, Ken, for being with us today.
Hey, great to be with you.
Well, what happens, or what is happening? We know what happened yesterday, the convening of a grassroots movement in a pretty posh hotel. But what came of that today?
Well, you know, it's unclear. There's this is really unprecedented on any number of levels, this idea that a sitting president would set up a nonprofit organization, sort of a private political arm, to try to push his agenda. And so the early effort has been on rallying his supporters, both his grassroots supporters, many of whom, as you mentioned, are kind of off-put by what they see as a lack of follow-through on some of the promises that the president made during his campaigns, and then also some of his big donors who, despite being among his most loyal supporters and having written the checks that allowed him to win the his re-election campaign, are a little bit fatigued. They're not ready to write the same level of checks, or, you know, at this point, some of them aren't ready to write any checks towards a group, let alone an untested group like Organizing for Action, which was debuted during his inauguration weekend to a room full of some of the biggest donors in politics, in Democratic politics.
Well, there's an aspect to this that I have to ask your opinion about, and that is there's a certain smugness about this group, a certain sense that they are smarter than the rest of the world. So when the suspicion was that, you know, or when people started having misgivings about this nonprofit group, they said, well, you know, we are not going to take donations anymore from corporations. However, there's a sister group across town called Business Forward, and you could go over there. What's Business Forward?
Well, Business Forward is a nonprofit group set up under a similar section of the Internal Revenue Service Code that is, as the name would suggest, it's a business-based group. It was kind of set up as the liberal alternative to the Chamber of Commerce, which, of course, liberals, even liberals in business, feel doesn't necessarily represent their viewpoints, even on business issues. So this Business Forward was set up by a couple of longtime Democratic operatives with close ties to the Obama White House and to other prominent Democratic politicians. And for a couple of years now, very quietly and behind the scenes, has been facilitating these meetings with prominent mostly left-leaning business types and the White House, and has brought top administration officials around the country to meet with its members in a way that really just smacks of traditional Washington pay-to-play access. And that's, I think, why this group, Organizing for Action, despite promises not to take corporate money and some of the steps that they have taken voluntarily, it should be noted, to sort of address these concerns about money and politics, really marks the sort of end of this transformation of Barack Obama from a real crusader against traditional Washington politics and the sort of disproportionate power of money in politics to a not only very traditional player in this game, but perhaps a pioneer in this game, setting up an organization that seems well positioned to really take advantage of folks who have a lot of money, who want to get access to the president and to his cabinet and administration because they have business interests before them. This group, Organizing for Action, and all of its affiliate groups, including not just Business Forward, but a number of other left-leaning nonprofits, really offer them, in the minds of watchdogs, an unprecedented opportunity to pay for access.
What kind of money is put on the table for access to the president through Business Forward?
Well, Business Forward, I forget the actual dues, but they're in the tens of thousands. So while that probably sounds like a lot to most of your listeners and certainly to me, it's actually not that much in the game of sort of big money Washington politics. However, Organizing for Action, though it is not accepting corporate donations, it is accepting donations from business people, including many who made their money through corporations, probably some of the same corporations that give the business forward. Organizing for Action is requesting or suggesting, I should say, that founding members give $50,000 a pop. And there was an article in the New York Times a few weeks back that said that that those who give $500,000 will be allowed to attend quarterly meetings with top White House officials, including the president himself at some point. So $500,000, I guess, would be the one going the sure way to get a meeting with top White House officials, writing a check of that size to this new Organizing for Action group.
Several of the names affiliated with both Organizing for Action and Business Forward come out of the Clinton administration. Is there some kind of a secret society going on with Barack Obama that he seems to be putting a whole bunch of former from Clintonites into these positions, and they are now situated and running things? Is this paranoia on my part?
Well, certainly there's always been a bit of cross-pollination once the sort of ill will from the 2008 primary was among many. I mean, certainly there are still those who still harbor that ill will, but once there was a thaw there among wide swaths of Clinton world and Obama land, we did see a lot of this cross-pollination. The one thing that I will say that I think is rather telling is that the Clintons sort of epitomized big money Democratic politics. I mean, they were able to, they functioned in a pre-McCain-Feingold world when Bill Clinton was in the White House. McCain-Feingold, of course, being the 2002 campaign finance overhaul that really banned this type of big, unlimited corporate and union money contributions to the party committees. Well, they were the masters of raising big money back when Bill Clinton was in the White House. You remember the Lincoln bedroom scandal where folks who gave huge sums of money to the Democratic National Committee were able to sleep over in the Lincoln bedroom. And there is some thought that if the rules were as they are now, with this unlimited money being allowed by these Supreme Court and federal court decisions, that Hillary Clinton might have beaten Barack Obama in the 2008 Democratic primary because a Hillary Clinton super PAC would just be gangbusters, much, much bigger and much more able to raise these types of big checks because of the Clintons' ties to these big donors than even the Mitt Romney super PAC. So it kind of makes sense that when Barack Obama completes this transition from being an ardent opponent of big money in politics to really embracing some of the trappings of it, he would surround himself with Clinton people because they're the masters of the game.
Also, from yesterday, of course, the reporters had to leave the room because they did not allow the reporters to hear the president's speech yesterday. I suppose, would he therefore be the founder of the Founders Summit? Is that understood, that is the situation?
Yeah, I mean, this group, there's no real question about it. This group is Barack Obama's group, and there are some legal questions about the propriety of that and ethical questions about the propriety of that. But that's what this group is selling, whether it's access to Barack Obama or just the idea of Barack Obama's agenda and Barack Obama, the politician. That's what they're selling. That's what they're raising money off of. And so Barack Obama has cooperated. And I don't think this group would exist were he not to have given it a tacit or, in this case, actual explicit blessing. It wouldn't really, there would be no reason for it to exist. And I don't think it would be able to have the same type of fundraising potential as you see it having now.
Well, I know he went from Congress, where he was meeting with Republicans who regard him now with a marked degree of suspicion. And he said, they asked him about this group. And he said, there's no need to worry. We're Democrats. We're not that smart to think that this is all about the election of 2014. Don't worry about it. Was he believed at all, or do you expect that in the not-too-distant future we will see a formalized challenge of the organization by Republicans?
Well, I think we're already seeing a little bit of it. I think the Republican lawyers and operatives who I talk to there have been a couple of things that they have regarded as suspicious and potentially problematic under the ethics rules and potentially under the campaign finance laws. But I think they're kind of sitting back and waiting to see what this organization actually does, because other than convene this summit and raise money, it really hasn't done a whole lot yet. I think Republicans in Congress, the answer to your question is Republicans are very suspicious of it. They don't believe when he says it's not political. I think Republicans in Congress are worried about it, and they have reason to be, because, you know, on the one hand, there's this conversation going on and there's this effort to strike a grand bargain. But I think that they are concerned that if there is some, and this is maybe not so much the leaders, the Republican leaders in Congress, but perhaps more conservative members of the Republican conferences in the House and the Senate might have reason to be concerned that if there is a grand bargain or any other kind of bargain reached between President Obama, Mitch McConnell, and John Boehner, and these Republicans don't vote for it, either because they think that it's not going to be palatable for their conservative constituents back home or because they're philosophically opposed to it, they have reason to worry that this new organization, Organizing for Action, might go through their districts and spend money either on the ground organizing or potentially on television ads opposing them, whether it's expressly in an electoral context, vote against this guy, which the Organizing for Action folks have said that they won't do, or this sort of wink and a nod type advertising, you know, Representative Smith or Senator Jones refused to do what was right for the American people and support the grand bargain on the budget or on the fiscal cliff or whatever. You know, it could be a real weapon, and I think that, frankly, is the idea behind it.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Ken. I know you're pressed for time today, but I'm thankful that you had enough time to spend with us here today and give us a bird's-eye view of what's going on.
Hey, it's my pleasure chatting with you.
Thanks a lot. Well, let's get really specific here. This organization, and what upsets me about it, is that it comes out of a particular investment that the African American community first made in this ambitious man, Barack Obama. And yet, after the investment is made and attracted more and more and more people, and people got so excited about this young man with great promise and with such fervor and such a sincere desire to change the conditions for all these folks, all this talk, it was really hitting the right notes. But in the end, it becomes this, and I'm going to break it down for you. Number one, it's an old story. Although Barack Obama was the face and the personality that was needed to bring this amount of energy about and to get people excited, he is not the owner of the intellectual property developed out of this brand new movement. He is merely the agent of it. In other words, somebody said, okay, we have the science. We think we know how to do this thing. They weren't actually professionals at it then. They learned on the job. So I'm making the case that the black community initially was a kind of a guinea pig. Let's experiment. They learned a lot about this sphere of influence that they're now masters of through the collaboration with the black community in Chicago. Barack Obama does not have possession of the intellectual property developed out of this crucible provided by the African-American community. the opportunity to study it, the opportunity to experiment, the opportunity to observe, the opportunity to develop the science of it belongs to somebody else. That's a very important lesson to learn. He is great. He's grateful, too, because he got what he wanted, Barack Obama. He got where he wanted to go. They got what they wanted. They wanted to know the science of it, how to develop the science of it, so that they are the sole proprietors of that knowledge, of that science, of that information. And to this day, they are the sole proprietors. He facilitated that. And then comes another wave of people who are the engineers of the political side. They engineer the tactics. They engineer the moves on the chessboard. So when you put the people with the science, the statistical analysis, the data collection, the mining of the black community was what brought a whole bunch of people together, creating an entirely new industry, an entirely new approach to politics that was predicated first on the study in the African American community in Chicago. It was amplified the higher the subject desired to go. So from the state legislature to the U.S. Senate, and then ultimately to the presidency of the United States, they tweaked it as they went. But don't forget, this was an opportunity they couldn't even pay for, but it was afforded because the crucible of study was in the black community of Chicago. We've had a long history of things like this, where we provide the wherewithal for somebody else's knowledge. They own it, they never share it. And they become experts. But my dissatisfaction goes on in other areas. Here is the grassroots, and they dare to say this word. This president, who I have pointed out before, doesn't go below the middle class. He talks about the middle class. But the grassroots is providing the energy and the wherewithal for the realization of the bennies by the middle class. And this president is doing that. We are still toting that barge and we're still lifting that bale. We are bringing lots and lots and lots of fuel to a fire from which we enjoy no warmth. The Democratic Party isn't doing what he wants us to do. The middle class are not doing what he wants us to do. But they park that bus right in our garage, say, this is your job. We need lemmings. And you are lemmings. You look like lemmings, and so go out and do your lemming thing. We just tell you what to do. And like obedient little lemmings, you go out there and get it done. Because big things are resting on your little efforts. There are people making a lot of money on the strength of the volunteered time, the unpaid time of a whole bunch of folks. The president is quite content to have you go out there and beat the pavement and give up your time for no pay, so that the experts can sit in their air-conditioned offices trying to convince the world that they're doing grassroots politics. And we get no share of the bennies whatsoever. You think I'm lying? Let me make my case. This president hasn't even kept ties with black folks in Chicago. He doesn't even talk to black folks anymore. He doesn't even talk to the caucus. And they're right there in Washington. He has no use for black people. You remember we did the thing where he is attending a ceremony to install the statue of a black woman in the Capitol, and he can't bring himself to say black people. He can't say it. He can't say the word. This is not a shared agenda, and we have to remember that. This mission that Michelle Obama has been sent out to convince the world that we ought to do exactly as they ask is not a shared agenda at all. Barack Obama has not yet done for our community what he was supposed to do. He's had 6 years already. He has not yet done it. And his priorities reflect another group of people's interests. Let's talk about gun control. He says the first three things that this group is supposed to be dealing with is to assist, to apply pressure so that these three priorities could be done with in Congress: gun control, immigration, and a balanced budget. The gun control measures that they're talking about have nothing to do with the black community. We talked about that. They have not even begun to address gun control issues as it relates to the black community, the Latino community. They're carrying forth the gun control measures that are important to white middle class people, the real people who are affected. We have not even a penny cut in 10 in that. But we are supposed to go out there and assist him in carrying through a raft of, he's calling it reforms. Those are not reforms, tweaks. I call them tweaks. To get a couple of tweaks done that have nothing, not one of these things has any relevance to the black community. None. Immigration. Oh, yes, we're supposed to run out there and help him get this immigration reform through. Didn't we just talk about 106,000 Haitians whose approved program for family reunification has yet to be activated by this same president? We have the immigration issues that are important and that he is interested in carrying through in Congress have nothing to do with black people. Nothing. Not even when the rightest of the right wingers in the Republican Party said, let's get this done. All he has to do is say, okay, it isn't going to cost the government a penny. And he won't do it. 106,000 people suffering, cut off from their families when their families want them here so they can take care of them in the aftermath of an earthquake 3 years ago. But we are supposed to jump on this bandwagon and again, go out there and muscle support, not get paid for it, but get the activity associated with this and so they could ram it through Congress. You out of your mind? A balanced budget. You know you're not talking to black folks with this balanced budget business. You're not talking to anybody. You haven't done a budget in 4 years. And now it is the people who put you there, it's now their job to help you do a budget. And could we make a little notation about this budget that you want to pass? The budget that you want to pass will make the same people suffer more than anybody else. The budget is to be balanced on the backs of the poor, And by the way, the population of the poor is at its highest in more than a decade. 46 million people, including 20 million children, are poor in this country. And you've been at the helm for 6 years. You're interested in doing what your guide, Mr. Clinton, instructs you to do, because he did it. He balanced the budget on the backs of the poor. He changed welfare as we know it. He left a big surplus, of course. If you cut essential programs, you will realize the savings. There are people trying to figure out how they're going to make it from Monday to Tuesday. And you have the nerve, the unmitigated gall, the shamelessness to tell the same people that you're going to smack in a minute. I need your help. I need you to go out there and help me pass this budget. Of course, you know, it's, as he said, it's going to be painful. But you run out there for no pay. You have an administration. Just today, a report comes out about the Department of Justice being in total disarray, including the Voting Rights Division. We saw what your Department of State looked like. Totally crazy. You don't have a full cabinet. In other words, the president is overwhelmed. The demands, the real demands are hitting him now, and he can't figure out what to do. His advisors have already bailed on him because they have already situated themselves in very lucrative and strategic positions. It doesn't matter whether he stays or goes now. They're already in place. And they've been doing lots and lots of business. You have one in Treasury. You have one in charge of the Fed. One at the Office of Management and Budget. They know what they're doing. They're not there to partner with the president in service of the masses. They're there to make money. They're there to make money and to facilitate the making of money by giving access to power. The silly president gets up and starts talking about, well, it's your job now, you people. You put me here. It's your job. It's your responsibility to make me successful. We need to ask for an accounting. What is the president? Didn't we say what our priorities were? Our priority, number one, was jobs. That was our priority. It has vanished from the list of priorities. Our priority was bridging the gap between rich and poor. That was our priority. Our priority was quality education for the children in our schools. Your priority is you put a guy who specializes in charter schools in charge of education, and he's still there. Meanwhile, 120 schools in Chicago are on the block. In Philadelphia, they have already closed more than two dozen schools. But in your own backyard, they are planning a wipeout of public schools. Our priority is affordable housing. You have nothing to say about affordable housing. You're busy bailing out the banks, who, by the way, robbed the government blind, giving these phony baloney mortgages to people who could not afford them. Our priority is foreign policy in Africa and the Caribbean, too. That's not on your agenda. Our priority is about prison reform and sentencing reform. Now, there you could really go crazy and do some reforming. That's not your priority. You just issued 17 pardons the other day to people accused of very minimal things. The real people who need to be pardoned, you're not even taking their height, as my mother would say. And we could go on and on and on about where our priorities have been for the last 6 years with this man who believes that he can present himself to the community over and over again, making demands of it, making the community responsible again for the success of getting things done. That's your job. You're the head of the Democratic Party. You're the big cheese on campus. You're the man. You're the smart man. All these people who are unqualified for the jobs, you put them in there. You put them in there. And now with this phony baloney organization that you're presenting, Organizing for America. You're not organizing for Black America. You intend to use Black America to organize for that small group of people who have their own priorities set. This is heartbreaking. Because so much hope, so much expectation, so much anticipation has been invested. People looking, and they don't want much. There isn't much that is demanded. And there's nothing that you have offered. You ignore you cut yourself off completely. You don't even need to talk to Black folks. You come to Florida, which has grown in population because of Black folks coming to Florida from the Caribbean. You don't even know where. I was saying at one point, I want to buy the president a good GPS system because he apparently can't find Black people anywhere. He doesn't know where they are. He can't talk to them. And he himself has created a racially based ethic in the way he goes about business. This Black man has made it clear that the moral imperative that he has is to satisfy the hopes and dreams and aspirations of the white middle class and white people with money. That's his mission in life. That's where he takes his instruction. That is his orientation. So, I'm a generous person. I like the idea that we should pool our money together and buy him books by Frantz Fanon, books by Amos Wilson, that speak to confusion of identity. And I want you folks out there to not excuse what you're seeing. Because it's a Black man. Or because he is a liberal guy. He is not a liberal. He's never been a liberal, not one day. He has had the benefit of time. He has had the benefit of doubt. He does not deserve any more time or doubt. We have to become vocal about this. These games that they play with the very lives of our communities. Black, white, Latino, everybody, gay, straight, everybody's in the soup. We are hesitant to say the truth that we know. And we do great injustice to ourselves and to the future. Look how much time has been wasted. 6 years. You know, the truth is, in the 6 years, George Bush would have been a better choice. He at least did something, gave us something. He went to Africa and said, hey, here's a couple of million bucks for malaria. This president didn't even do that. I'm talking about the consciousness of people. You know, mature folks could understand what it is I'm saying. I'm stressing the African American aspect of it because it is at the root of where this thing starts. And it plays into the racist model. Even when African Americans are doing it, it's racist. I pointed that out with respect to the gun question. How could a black president coming from Chicago decide that the issue for gun violence really must deal with the concerns of the white community? And he responds because it was occurring in the white community and there was an expectation. Nobody had to ask him to show up. Nobody had to ask him to make it a priority. But this speaks to some really serious issues psychologically. When you come from Chicago, where people die, more people, black people have died from gun violence every year they die. At a rate higher than soldiers killed in Afghanistan. This has been going on for years. People have been talking about it for years. But you get motivated when it involves real people. You yourself create a racial imbalance in terms of your intended public policy. And even now, you intend not to respond to the unique issues of African Americans. You intend not to do it. But you will ask African Americans to go out there and help you organize a community in order that you can respond to a community other than theirs. Is that sick or what? So remove the scales from your eyes. This is not a hate fest. I'm not bashing Barack Obama. I am insisting that the community get its just due for the investment that it has made. I am insisting that the community mature itself, grow up, and learn that there are some things that are just not to be forgiven. They're not to be forgiven. Because if you understand that this very thing comes to us at such high a price, so high a price, we do ourselves a grievous injustice when we forgive people who casually calculate. Oh, we could get, you know, they're done. They'd go for me. I don't have to worry about them. I don't have to pay attention to them. They're really not even real in my experience. You know, they're just on the periphery of my experience. And that's exactly where I want them. Because the people who matter to me are the people with money. Those are the people who matter. Because I want to be like them. I want so much to be like them. Well, I have waxed philosophic for this entire program, which means I have some serious making up to do. And that will happen tomorrow. We will devote our time discussing this because this, the debut of this organization, is shameless. It means that the president has gone beyond a certain point of tolerance. You can't tolerate this kind of contempt. You have to say something, and you have to say something openly about it. Because now he becomes the contempt at the highest level. We've been seeing black people in black communities all the time dismissing their duties that they have to the people who put them there. We are not going to tolerate this. We're not going to tolerate this. Do not tolerate this from Barack Obama. Don't do it. So this is a time to organize alternatives. This is the time, again, to remind yourself that the Democratic Party has ceased to be useful. And you ought to get out of it. Dump it. Teach it a very, very harsh lesson. Punish it severely for visiting this level of contempt upon all of us. Construct healthy alternatives and move in a way that suggests that you take yourself seriously. You take your vote seriously. You take your pride as an American citizen seriously. Tell me you were the organizing for America. Give me a break. I want to thank you for being with me today and allowing me the space to just kind of lay out my thoughts on this. But, you know, I really, really love talking with people. I really do. So we'll connect to each other tomorrow. And we'll devote the time to talking whatever it is you wish to talk about tomorrow. Certainly you can write me a note at leadstories@gmail.com or post something on my Facebook. I'm getting into that Facebook thing now at Lead Stories as well. So see you. Stay tuned. Coming up next is Occupied Territory with Mike Fader. Bye-bye.